Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'm recording the Midland Reporter Telegram from Monday, June 2nd, Section A, State and Local News. Chacon's attorney calls for bond reduction from $3 million to $750,000 by Ben Schaefer. A bond reduction hearing for Mario Chacon Jr., the man accused of murdering 20-year-old Madeline Pantoja, was held Thursday in the 142nd District Court at the Midland County Courthouse. Chacon's lawyer asked that the alleged murderer's bond be reduced from $3 million to $750,000. Judge David Rogers, the presiding judge in the 142nd District Court, heard the arguments, will review the evidence, and make an official ruling on Friday. Midland County prosecutors' main concern was if Chacon were released, he would be able to flee to Mexico, given his extended family members who reside across the southern border. Prosecutors also noted that because of the seriousness of the offense, a criminal history that shows a propensity for violence and threats of suicide made by Chacon in the weeks leading up to the murder, Chacon's bond should remain $3 million. Prosecutors also claim Chacon's attempts to mislead Midland Police Department officers when contacted about Pantoja's disappearance should factor in to maintaining the $3 million bond. If the amount were to be reduced, Midland County lawyers suggested that heavy bail requirements be imposed on Chacon during his time outside of jail and during his trial. Chacon's lawyer called Chacon's mother onto the stand. She said if the bond was reduced and her son was released from jail, their family would make sure he attends his arraignment and trial on time each day. Chacon's lawyer said bond amounts are supposed to be used as an instrument of oppression and that $3 million is too high. The Chacon's lawyer said Chacon is innocent until he is proven guilty by a jury. Protesters rally against bond cut by Mercedes Cordero. Cheapest gas prices in Texas found in Odessa. Midland gas prices fall below state average by Ben Schaefer. Are Midland gas prices headed toward the least expensive in the state? AAA Texas reported this week that the average in Midland, $3.04, remained lower than the state average, $3.08, for the second week in a row. The organization showed that average in Midland dropped by 4 cents, while the state average fell by a penny. AAA Texas also showed many of the lowest prices are in West Texas. San Angelo and Odessa tied for the lowest average in the state at $3. Abilene was the next closest at $3.04. Midland's average just finished outside the lowest five prices in the state and was lower than Lubbock at $3.09 and Amarillo at $3.13. Prices drop around the region included 10 cents in Abilene, 8 cents in El Paso to 333, 3 cents in Odessa, and 2 cents in Lubbock and Amarillo. In many areas, gas price averages continue to reflect slightly cheaper crude oil prices over the past few weeks, AAA reported in its weekly newsletter. While demand figures are expected to have been strong over the Memorial Day holiday weekend, the outlook for crude oil prices has been unclear. That uncertainty is tied to the U.S. debt ceiling talks, rising interest rates, as well as inflation worries. Also weighing on crude oil prices, according to market watchers, are unclear demand outlooks for fuel in China. A year ago, Midland's average gas price was $4.32, $1.24 higher. The state average was $4.29, $1.17 higher. Texas remains home to the second lowest gas price average in the country. Mississippi is the lowest at $2.99. and enjoy the well-deserved time off. City Posts Vacancies on Commissions by Stuart Doreen. Herbicide Treatment to Cause Temporary Closures at Big Bend by Mercedes Cordero. Big Bend National Park visitors will experience temporary closures along sections of the Rio Grande Village Nature Trail, according to a press release from the National Park Service. From June 3rd through 7th, a team of biologists and resource staff will be applying herbicide to control non-native giant cane along the river in the Rio Grande Village area. This is a follow-up treatment to a successful prescribed burn in early May. A pesticide is being applied, and it will directly apply to all resprouts of the invasive plants post-fire, according to the NPS. During this time, sections of the Rio Grande Village Nature Trail, specifically the spur of the trail that leads to the banks of the river, may be temporarily closed. The Rio Grande Village boat ramp and the use of the river will remain open. With the removal of this cane, the river can carry the sediment downstream, opening up gravel bars and wider floodplains again. This in turn benefits native willows and wildlife such as mussels, fish, and beaver. Removing thickets of giant cane also opens up the banks of the river for recreational use, according to the press release. New Houston Independent School District Superintendent makes swift, sweeping changes by Jen Rice, Yulin Shang, Sam Gonzalez, Kelly Hannah Dellinger, Jer Romero, and Sarah Smith. Mike Miles wasted little time Thursday before imposing major changes to the Houston Independent School District he now oversees, launching a plan to reconstitute 29 struggling campuses that forces employees to reapply for their jobs but promises higher pay to some. It is my great privilege to lead HISD in this work and make it one of the best school districts in the country, Miles said in a tweeted statement. For the families of students who are not getting what they need from their schools, improving your child's education experience is job one. The Texas Education Agency selected Miles, a former Dallas ISD superintendent, and 9 new board members to run Houston ISD. The takeover capped years of legal feuding over a state takeover that critics decry as an anti-democratic power grab. TEA Commissioner Mike Morath, who served with Miles a decade ago in Dallas ISD, announced his pick on the first day of summer for Houston ISD. The 9 board managers named are Audrey Momani, Rick Campo, Angela Lamond Flowers, Michelle Cruz Arnold, Cassandra Azim Bandy, Jeanette Garza Lindner, Rolando Martinez, Paula Mendoza, and Adam P. Ravone. The group includes HISD parents, a small business owner, and a trial attorney. One newly appointed member, Garza Lindner, narrowly lost a bid for the board in 2021. While the group will have its first meeting on June 8th, Miles confirmed Thursday that 29 schools in the Wheatley, Cashmere, and North Forest High School feeder patterns will be reconstituted as part of his efforts to establish wholesale systematic reform in struggling schools. Staff from top to bottom, including principals, teachers, and maintenance staff, will have to reapply for their jobs, which will be open to any qualified applicant. Those hired will earn an average of $85,000 per year and be supported by teacher apprentices and learning coaches, Miles said, and what he's dubbing the new education system. He compared the system to a hospital model in which the apprentices and coaches do much of the prep work and teachers, the surgeons in this scenario, execute the most critical tasks and get paid the most money. Lesson plans and instructional materials will be developed by central administration and distributed to teachers, though they will not be required to use them. Teachers who are not rehired at their school or who are not interested in reapplying there will be placed at a different campus in the district, Miles said. Librarians will likely not be brought back to those campuses, Miles said in an interview with the Houston Chronicle editorial board. Wheatley's staff learned of the reconstitution at an afternoon meeting with their principal. It is the second time in 2 years that teachers at the Fifth Ward School, which received its first failing rating that triggered takeover discussions in 2014, have been told to reapply for their jobs. Last year, many teachers did not return, current staff members say. John Lohman, a history teacher at Wheatley for 7 years, believes he'll be back at the school, but worries about what the continued instability means for students who, like the vast majority of children at the 29 schools being reconstituted, are Black and Latino from low-income communities. Unfortunately, it's hard to build connections with people if they keep changing everything. But to feel like you could lose some of these kids who might benefit from exposure to different cultures and different ideas, it's hard to imagine that that could all be gone, Lohman said. Lohman is skeptical that a higher salary will be enough to keep teachers around who weren't already cut out to work at the schools being targeted under the shakeup. Unfortunately, the way it works over here is you can tell which teachers will be able to stay and which will be gone after a month, he said. The turnover rate at Wheatley alone is crazy. The kids test you, no matter what race you are, because they're so used to people giving up on them, or another situation that is unfortunate. Teachers Union President Jackie Anderson said the move to reconstitute 29 schools was drastic, especially when you haven't been on the job 24 hours. He needs to get in here first and see what's going on, Anderson said. So much for relationships. They don't value those. Obituaries and death notices. Carol Dube Clay. Carol Dube Clay passed away on Memorial Day, May 29, 2023, after a brief but courageous battle with glioblastoma. Carol was born on November 5, 1939, to Lenora and Oscar Dube in Goose Creek, Texas. Carol is survived by her son Keith and wife Nancy, with a grandson and a granddaughter, her son Craig and wife Christine, with two granddaughters and a grandson. She is survived by her brother Leonard, Shorty Dube, and wife Joanne, as well as many cousins, nieces, and nephews. Carol was preceded in death by her husband Terry Clay, who passed away in July 2020. Family and friends are welcome to join us to celebrate Carol's life at 2 p.m. on Sunday, June 4th, at Grace Lutheran Church, 3000 West Golf Course Road in Midland. Memorial donations can be made to Our Brain Bank to help move glioblastoma from terminal to treatable, or to Grace Lutheran Church Bauman Scholarship Fund. Services are being conducted by Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Stacy Luttrell. Stacy Ray Luttrell, 52 of Midland, passed away on May 27, 2023, in Midland, Texas, of heart complications. Stacy was born in Corpus Christi to Don Luttrell and Irese Cardwell on January 27, 1971. Stacy Luttrell was preceded in death by her mother Irese Cardwell Jordan and her father Don Luttrell. Stacy is survived by her son Evan Luttrell, her daughter Zoe Claproth, her nephew Julian Gonzalez, and sisters Dana Luttrell and Caroline Luttrell. There will be a celebration of life ceremony on Saturday, June 3, 2023, between the hours of 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. at Kessler's Hall, 3204 West Wall Street, Midland, Texas, 79701. Kathy Keiki Greenwood. Keiki passed away Saturday, May 27th, after a lengthy illness. Survived by her husband of 53 years, Tommy Greenwood, daughter Marty Johnson, son Button Greenwood, and five grandchildren, also brother James Gamel. Services are Saturday, June 3rd at 10:30 a.m. at Bellevue Baptist Church. Van Anthony Bowden. Van Anthony Bowden, 62 of Odessa, died Tuesday, May 30th, 2023, in Midland. Graveside will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, June 5th, 2023 at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Johnny E. Enojos. Johnny E. Enojos, age 56, of Midland, Texas, passed away May 30th, 2023. Visitation will be held Saturday, June 3rd, 2023 at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, 1502 North La Mesa Road, Midland, Texas, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Cremation services have been arranged. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Ricky Everett Daniels. Ricky Everett Daniels, 74, of Odessa, passed away Friday, May 26, 2023, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements have been entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
Good day, this is Glenn. I'm going to be reading today for the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, May 30th, 2023. Why WLA student competes at Scripps National Spelling Bee by Stuart Doreen. No matter how Swetha Jayakumar places in the Scripps National Spelling Bee, she is going to enjoy the experience. The soon-to-be ninth grader at Young Women's Leadership Academy in Midland is technically a National Spelling Bee returning participant, having competed in 2021, but this is her first time to Washington for the contest. That is because 2021 was a COVID year, and competing in the National Spelling Bee was done virtually using video conferencing software. For Jaya Kumar, she never took in Washington, D.C., but completed from her desk at home. So when she says she's ready to meet pronouncer Jacques Bailey, or any of the other judges, or that she's ready to interact with other contestants in person, she means it, because it literally will be a first for the two-time Reporter Telegram Region Spelling Bee champion. Now I am here, Jayakumar said. It is cool, even if it is my first and last time. Jayakumar earned her spot in the Scripps National Spelling Bee after bettering friendly rival Shreera Sivakumar of Carver Center at the 36th Annual Midland Reporter Telegram Spelling Bee, sponsored by Diamondback Energy. The win allows her to wear the 204 placard, the number given to the Midland champion based on the order where the Midland, Texas representative falls in the spelling bee order. The preliminaries begin Tuesday. Jayakumar said she will be part of the third group of spelling bee qualifiers who will take the stage for a potential two-part preliminary round. Spellers on Tuesday will have the opportunity to appear at the microphone twice, first to spell a word and then to define a word to show a speller's command of vocabulary. If the speller doesn't spell the word correctly or misses the definition, he or she is eliminated. If the speller is correct on both fronts, he or she will have an opportunity to spell a second word later in the round. If the speller returns to the microphone and spells that second word correctly, he or she advances to Wednesday's quarterfinals. The 13-year-old said she expects her first turn in front of the microphone on Tuesday will be nerve-wracking. She called her studying for the National Spelling Bee more intense than her preparation for the Regional Bee. My goal is to do well, Jayakumar said. Still, the YWLA student repeated the National Spelling Bee experience isn't entirely about the competition. She wants to have fun and soak in the opportunity to be among the regional champs from across the country. The Bee provides things to do during bee work, ranging from STEM and Lego club experiences to painting and word challenges. Jayakumar said she is looking forward to National Mall experience on Friday, along with a College Board presentation where she will learn about the SAT test and changes coming in the future. Scripps also holds a banquet for spellers at the end of the week. At the end, after all the spelling and the competition, I won't see them as competition, Jayakumar said. This is about connecting with people who are like-minded.
This article is entitled Chevron Hosts Tours of Methane Mitigation Center by Mella McEwen. Efforts by Permian Basin oil and gas operators to mitigate methane emissions are taking the global stage, as many countries seek ways to mitigate their own emissions. The Permian Basin was the site of a recent visit by a reverse trade mission on advanced technologies for methane abatement, sponsored by the U.S. Trade and Development Agency. Delegates from 15 high-level public and/or private sector representatives from the oil and gas sectors of participating countries in the Middle East and North Africa visited Washington, D.C., Midland, Odessa, and Houston. They were joined by representatives from the U.S. Foreign Commercial Service. Chevron hosted the delegation at both its Midland and Houston locations. we toured our Integrated Operations Control Center here in our Midland office, recounted Ryder Booth, Vice President of Chevron's Mid-Continent Business Unit. The center allows staff to monitor Chevron's Permian Basin facilities in real time, and they can be instantly alerted to any challenges. The visitors also viewed Chevron's real-time autonomous optimizer, a digital operating system that can address challenges like water levels that exceed set levels or, if flares begin, reduce gas flows until the flares are out. Booth said this technology has resulted in an 80% reduction in flaring since its installation. Chevron also took them to the GBG North Centralized Tank Battery, which includes vapor recovery units, VRUs, and sensors installed by Project Canary to monitor for methane emissions. Booth said the company also highlighted for the visitors its LDAR, leak detection and repair, use, including cameras and flyovers done in partnership with Bridger Platonics. "We do believe in the importance of collaboration in methane management," said Vanessa Ryan, Chevron's methane reduction manager and chair of the American Petroleum Institute's environmental partnership. "We've learned a lot in the Permian Basin and share our best practices. We've also learned a lot from other companies." She added that Chevron, with a global presence, has shared best practices learned in the Permian Basin across its global operations, and now is sharing them outside its global footprint. "Our goal is simple, keeping methane in the pipeline," she said. "The way we do that in the Permian Basin is with our factory design. That includes VRUs at tank batteries to ensure as much gas goes into the sales line as possible, and utilizing equipment with compressed air instead of pneumatics." She noted that the company is also working with Project Astra, a collaboration between several oil and gas operators and the University of Texas at Austin, to establish a sensor network that will provide near-continuous monitoring across the Permian Basin oil and gas facilities and share data and data analytics. Both Booth and Ryan said they are proud of both Chevron's accomplishments in reducing its methane emissions and the Permian Basin's work in reducing methane emissions. Booth emphasized the Permian Basin is home to the world's largest carbon basins. "I believe the future of energy is lower carbon, and we are committed to not only meet demand for energy, but for lower carbon energy," Booth said. "The objective of this RTM is to showcase U.S. state-of-the-art advanced methane detection, monitoring, and measurement technologies, emissions control and reduction processes such as leak detection and repair, advanced methane capture and repurposing technologies, including venting and flaring abatement, advanced methane tracking technologies, advanced policies, regulations, and best practices." Sources used for this article: Ryder Booth, Vice President of Chevron's Mid-Continent Business Unit; Vanessa Ryan, Chevron's Methane Reduction Manager.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, May 27th. A century ago, Santa Rita blew in Permian oil industry. Well, helped create oil and gas industry that now dominates U.S. and world. The story was written by Mella McEwen. For 646 days, beginning January 8, 1921, the cable rig pounded the ground at a site in Reagan County, digging out 4 feet a day. Finally, on May 27, 1923, the bit reached the dolomitic sands just above the 3,050-foot level, and the driller shut the well down when he saw gas bubbles escaping the casing head. Then, early the next morning, May 28, 1923, the Santa Rita No. 1 blew in, spraying oil over the top of the derrick, covering a 250-yard area around the well site, and attracting visits from area residents and oil company scouts. More significantly, the well transformed not only the rural area around it, but the entire Permian Basin, proving there was commercial quantities of oil and creating an oil and gas sector that today leads not only the nation, but the world. And because the land was leased from the University of Texas, Santa Rita No. 1 brought in $20 million in royalties to the Permanent University Fund before it was plugged in 1990, after 67 years of production. The first royalty payment was $516, and over its lifetime, the Santa Rita produced 2.4 million barrels of oil equivalent. The original equipment used to drill the well sits on the University of Texas at Austin campus. Today, University lands oversees 10,170 wells on the 2.1 million acres bequeathed to the University of Texas and Texas A&M Systems, building the Permanent University Fund into the richest endowment in the country, passing Harvard University last year on the strength of strong commodity prices. True, the W.H. Abrams well in Mitchell County was the first Permian Basin oil well, quote, but most don't know about it, said Todd Houck, chair of Midland College's history department. In the collective consciousness of West Texans, it's the Santa Rita that comes to mind, he said. Quote, there's a romantic feel, an adventurous feel to the story of the well that almost wasn't, he told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. Reagan County Attorney Rupert Ricker had the initial idea for drilling in West Texas, leasing 431,136 acres in Reagan, Upton, Arion, and Crockett counties. But, unable to pay the $43,000 in filing fees, he sold his ideas, maps, and preliminary leases to Frank Pickrell, an old Army buddy, for $2,500. Pickrell partnered with Hayden Krupp, an El Paso merchant, to move the project forward. Krupp borrowed the money to pay the filing fee, and Texan Oil and Land was incorporated to raise capital. The story goes that Pickrell promised a group of Catholic women he would climb to the top of the derrick and sprinkle rose petals blessed by a New York priest before the well, named after the patron saint of the impossible, was spudded. Quote, he didn't have any sour grapes, Ricker's grandson, Prince Ricker, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. He was glad to be part of the story, end quote. Having studied law at the University of Texas Law School, Ricker went on to become an attorney and a judge. His grandson, who said he was only 4 years old when Ricker died, remembers him as being scary with green eyes and coal black hair. He marveled at how his great-grandparents had walked all the way from Corsicana to Reagan County, a trek that took about a month, to claim acreage north of Big Lake. His great-grandfather had tried to drill a well on the Ricker Ranch, but it was a dry hole. Of course, oil was later discovered on the ranch, and Prince Ricker said it is home to plenty of well pads. While oil would most likely have been discovered without the Santa Rita, the well piqued the public's interest, said Houck. It also sent interest in drilling on the 2.1 million acres owned by university lands skyrocketing, he added. To date, spurred by the Santa Rita, the Permanent University Fund benefits 21 higher education institutions, 6 agencies, and 397,000 students with a market value of $31 billion. All Texans benefit from the education and health care funded by the 4% to 7% of the PUF value distributed annually. Quote, what a wonderful legacy we're left with, and it started because he had a hunch, said Prince Ricker. New study links takeaway constraints and increased flaring. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Concerns about flaring and greenhouse gas emissions are heating up once again in the Permian Basin as increased oil and natural gas production fill up takeaway capacity. Quote, "We're raising awareness of an issue we see picking up as production ramps up again," Jen Snyder, senior advisor at Validare, a measurement reporting and verification software as a service firm, said. Quote, "What we see now with few pipeline projects on the radar and also projections of strong production, flaring is picking up again, and the industry is back again to being portrayed as a bad actor," she told the Reporter Telegram via Zoom. She and Justin Carlson, co-founder and chief commercial officer at East Daily Analytics, were discussing their new report, Emissions Critical, Flaring, Methane, and the Cost of Looming Permian Gas Takeaway Constraints. "Producers have done a fantastic job responding to the demands for more production," Carlson said. "And the industry wants to do more, but faces what he called the trilemma of meeting the demand for clean, affordable, secure energy." Quote, "It's challenging, and the reason for this report, to talk about emissions, but also to raise awareness, is a complex issue. It's a daunting challenge," he said. Chimed in Snyder, quote, "One of the things to keep in mind with these efforts to cut emissions is not just responding to the administration or their commitment to their methane pledges. They're responding to the needs of global buyers. Europeans are in the market for clean molecules. For the Permian Basin to take that market and grow into an almost insatiable desire for clean molecules, if they follow the regulations on the table, it's a global opportunity," end quote. "But that opportunity is not just for Exxon or Chevron or ConocoPhillips," she said, "but also smaller producers who are also challenged with pipeline constraints and uncertain balance sheets. But," said Carlson, "infrastructure is needed," quote, "and we need everyone on the same page and understand the consequences of not investing in infrastructure. We aren't building infrastructure as quickly as we can," end quote. The report notes that Permian Basin flaring caught the attention of governments, investors, and consumers in 2019 as natural gas transmission capacity lagged the associated gas production coming along with explosive oil production growth. Another round of infrastructure projects is now under construction, but Permian production growth again looks set to exceed this pipeline build-out and threatens to undo the reputation building the industry has done since 2019, said Snyder. Snyder and Carlson both noted that since the last time Permian output exceeded takeaway capacity, environmental concerns have become even more prominent. Permian operators have sharply increased spending on environmental monitoring, and several large operators have either already ended routine flaring or have pledged to do so soon. Some larger operators likely will manage infrastructure constraints by delaying completions or shutting in production rather than flaring, prioritizing environmental performance over near-term cash flows. Quote, "With Permian flaring levels likely to rise, operators in the basin will face increased environmental scrutiny. It will be more important than ever to monitor both new and old flares to ensure that this increase in flaring doesn't also cause a sharp uptick in methane emissions, which has a much bigger near-term climate impact," Snyder said. Addressing the potential for increased flaring and emissions amid pipeline constraints will not only help an operator's license to operate, but is a license to make money, said Snyder. Quote, "Look at the focus on flaring but also emissions. Check for unlit flares or inefficient flares. That's money going up in smoke that has the potential to get to market, said Snyder. We've seen a sharp focus on emissions, and since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, a focus on LNG exports. We don't want Permian Basin operators to be shut out of opportunities, end quote. Enverus releases its top 100 private E&P operators list. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Midland companies in top 100. Endeavor Energy Resources is number 5. CrownQuest Operating is number 12. BTA Oil Producers is number 39. Fasken Oil and Ranch, number 47. Summit Petroleum, number 67. Legacy Reserves, number 74. PRI Operating is number 76. Henry Resources is number 84. Enverus Intelligence Research, a subsidiary of the energy-focused software-as-a-service firm Enverus, has released its list of the top 100 most prolific private oil and gas producers in the lower 48 and Gulf of Mexico. A quarter of the producers, 25, were active in the Permian Basin, and 8 of those are headquartered in Midland, according to the list. Quote, Enverus is uniquely positioned to provide a list of private companies that investors and operators need to pay attention to. Public companies disclose capital plans and production volumes in regular financial filings, but private operators can fly under the radar. Private companies deliver a large portion of domestic production, and keeping a finger on their pulse can help forecast regional supply and demand imbalances, said Gibson Scott, head of intelligence at EIR, in a statement releasing the list. The list was based on gross operated production in 2022 and includes a breakdown of liquids and gas production, total company well counts, recent rig programs, and comparison to their rankings the previous year. Midland's Endeavor Energy Resources ranked 5th on the list behind Continental Resources, Ascent Resources, Mewbourne Oil Company, and Aethon Energy. According to the list, Endeavor had 279,700 barrels of oil equivalent per day in 2022, 193,800 barrels of liquid, and 515,300 MCF of natural gas from 3,481 wells. Endeavor operated an average of 14 rigs as of March, according to the report. The company was ranked 6th in 2021. CrownQuest Operating held its spot at 12 for a second year, producing an average of 149,100 BOE per day from 1,409 wells, 94,900 barrels of liquid, and 325,700 MCF. CrownQuest operated an average 5 rigs in March. BTA Oil Producers fell 9 positions to number 39, producing 71,800 BOE per day in 2022 from 442 wells, 43,300 barrels of liquid, and 17,800 MCF. The company operated an average 3 rigs in March. Fasken Oil jumped 13 positions from 2021, coming in at 47. The company produced 44,300 BOE per day, 28,900 barrels of liquids, and 92,100 MCF from 1,270 wells. Fasken operated an average 2 rigs in March. Summit Petroleum rose 3 positions to number 67, producing 32,600 BOE per day in 2022, 20,200 barrels of liquid, and 74,700 MCF from 555 wells, Summit operated an average 2 rigs in March. Legacy reserves fell 8 positions to number 74, producing 28,700 BOE per day last year, 12,300 barrels of liquid, and 98,300 MCF from 916 wells, and operated an average of 1 rig in March. PRI operating rose to number 76, up 10 positions from 2021, producing 28,400 BOE per day, 21,400 barrels of liquids, and 42,400 MCF from 214 wells. The company averaged 3 rigs as of March. Henry Resources was a new entrant to the top 100, debuting at number 84 and producing 25,300 BOE per day from 180 wells. The breakdown is 18,400 barrels of liquids and 41,500 MCF. Henry averaged 1 rig in March. Ovintiv finds investor support for $4.2 billion acquisition. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Ovintiv's plans to acquire 3 portfolio companies, Black Swan Oil and Gas, Petro Legacy Energy, and Pietro Resources from NCAP Investments has apparently drawn investor support. Ovintiv officials said their offering of senior notes to fund the $4.2 billion acquisition was 4 times oversubscribed when it closed in mid-May. The offering was for a wide berth of senior notes, including $600 million due 2025, $700 million due in 2028, $600 million due in 2023, and $400 million due in 2053. The 2025 and 2028 notes have principal amounts of 5.6%, while the 2033 notes have a principal amount of 6.2%, and the 2053 notes have a principal amount of 7.1%. Proceeds from the notes, along with the sale of Ovintiv's Bakken assets for $825 million, will be used to pay for the acquisition. The acquisition is expected to close by the end of June, but company executives told the Reporter Telegram it could close a little earlier by mid-June. The assets, quote, are a great fit for us. They're adjacent to our existing operations in Martin and Andrews counties, Patty Posadowski, Senior Investor Relations Advisor and Media Relations with Ovintiv, told the Reporter Telegram. What attracted us to the assets is the inventory runoff of over 1,000 drilling locations, end quote. The deal also brings 65,000 net acres in the core of the Midland Basin. Operators drilling wells around the properties were reporting strong initial results, giving Ovintiv confidence in the quality of the locations. Once the acquisition is closed, the rig count on the new assets will be reduced from 7 to 2. When combined with 2 rigs already at work on Ovintiv assets, the company will be operating 4 rigs, adding a 5th rig by the end of the year. Posadowski said what was most attractive about the assets is their underdeveloped nature. 85% are undeveloped. Of the approximately 1,050 net 10,000-foot well locations, approximately 800 are premium return well locations and 250 are high-potential upside locations. Despite the strong economics, egress, getting the production from the Midland Basin to market, could be a challenge, officials caution. Posadowski said Ovintiv expects to reduce 200,000 barrels of oil and condensate per day from the Permian Basin in 2024.
Shaw Ross State University education students selected Midland's Rebecca Martinez for annual award. The Shaw Ross State University Educational Diagnostician Program announced in a press release this week that Rebecca Martinez of Midland ISD has been chosen as Site Supervisor of the Year for 2023. Site supervisors are practicing educational diagnosticians that support graduate students during their practicum semester to attend the necessary clinical hours for certification, according to the release. Martinez was nominated by her intern, Summer Telek, at Shaw Ross State University graduate student, also from Midland. Rebecca has been a great sounding board for my learning experience, said Telek in a release. I've definitely learned from her this year. The award is offered once per academic year. Site supervisors are nominated by their interns, after which they proceed through a competitive panel review for the award. There were many nominations by our Shaw Ross State University interns, and Rebecca's support stood out, said Dr. Lisa Thompson-Sousa, program coordinator, in the release.
Dear Dr. Roach, I'm writing in regarding your recent column on biotin affecting blood tests. I have yearly blood tests due to a thyroid condition. I take Synthroid daily. I also take 2,000 mcg of biotin twice a day because my nails were peeling and splitting. I seem to have had some improvement in my nails, so I would like to continue with the biotin. My question is this. How long before my blood test should I stop taking biotin to minimize the effects on the blood work and avoid any adverse blood test effects? Signed, L.S. Dr. Roach answers, biotin doesn't cause problems with the thyroid and doesn't affect the medication, but it can confuse the laboratory assay. You can avoid this by halting the biotin for 2 days prior to taking the thyroid test. Other hormonal tests, like progesterone and testosterone, can also be affected by biotin, but none of them are as prevalent as in thyroid testing.
Dear Abby, write Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate. X is still a negative influence on man's life. Dear Abby, my wife and I were married 21 years ago. Since then, she has admitted to cheating with 10 different men. Each time I stayed with her, hoping she'd change. I finally left 3.5 years ago because I couldn't take it anymore. She became homeless, but for the past year and a half, she has been living with my daughter and me because I saw her on the street one day and she looked terrible. We are now moving, and my daughter wants her mother to get a job. She's capable of getting one. My ex refused to get one to help pay the bills. Now I'm faced with another dilemma. Should I let her go on her own or fight for her to stay with us? My daughter is completely against her living with us. My income is limited. I'm on disability for a bad heart. My ex is 43 and I'm 58. Can you please advise? Not looking back in Colorado. Dear Not Looking Back, your daughter is right. You are disabled and on a limited income, and your ex-wife is able-bodied. With her out of there, your expenses will be lower. Nowhere in your letter did you mention that you still love this parasite, nor did you mention whether she has changed her ways. Your responsibility for her ended when the marriage did. Encourage her to reach out to her relatives for a place to stay or guide her to a shelter. But not only should you let her go, you must find the strength to insist upon it. Dear Abby, I consider myself a modest woman in today's world. I have a new granddaughter that my daughter-in-law nurses everywhere at any time, regardless of who she is around. I told my son she should cover herself in restaurants and other public places. I get embarrassed when she just pulls out a breast for anyone to see. She's European, and I understand it is more common there, but not so much in America. Am I overreacting? Looking away in California. Dear Looking Away, I think so. Nursing mothers are no longer relegated to feeding their infants in bathrooms as they were years ago. However, because you are embarrassed at the sight of your daughter-in-law nursing, consider leaving the table until she is finished to preserve your modesty. Dear Abby, Often I find myself seated near people who either speak too loudly or talk constantly without stopping, both of which annoy me. This usually happens in restaurants when I'm trying to enjoy a nice meal, although it has also happened recently on a train. My seatmate was talking to the passenger across the aisle. What can be done in such situations, hopefully in a polite way? Trying to relax. Dear Trying, a restaurant patron can quietly ask to move his or her seat to a quieter location. On public transportation, you should have offered to give your seat to the person across the aisle so your seat partner could continue the conversation without shouting across.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.